A bunch of states around the country have either passed or are considering laws that would create harsh penalties for people who trespass on or cause damage to oil and gas pipelines.
In Wisconsin, a state Senate committee is considering expanding a 2015 law that makes it a felony in cases involving utility providers. The change switches the language from utility to energy, so it includes natural gas, renewable energy, and oil and gas pipelines.
Later, we'll look at some of the criticisms surrounding these laws and how they could affect free speech rights.
First, we take a look at the states that have passed these laws and why. Jennifer DeLohi is a reporter for Bloomberg News covering energy and the environment. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Where do we first see these laws bubbling up in states across the nation?
Well, you know, the trend really started in oil and gas heavy states. Oklahoma was kind of played a leading role where you saw state lawmakers advance this idea of, you know, protecting pipelines and oil wells and other energy infrastructure. But it's spread pretty quickly. So, you know, Oklahoma has passed. It was, of course, the first to get in this direction. But Louisiana, Texas have all followed suit. North Dakota and South Dakota, where, of course, we've seen protests against the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access pipelines, also have put laws on the books. So it's really spread quite a ways from the traditional oil patch at this point. And of course, state lawmakers are broadening these crimes to include not just oil infrastructure, but other energy or infrastructure facilities.
Yeah, you mentioned Dakota Access, and I've got South Dakota roots. So looking back at those environmental protests, Standing Rock was one of the biggest demonstrations we've seen recently. How much did that protest impact the oil and gas industry or how state legislatures are thinking about regulating it?
Absolutely. It has inspired a lot of this activity. And it really has given, a visual demonstration and to all of these efforts by energy companies and utility companies to get these laws put on the books at state levels. They can very vividly point to, you know, the protests that we saw unfold in South Dakota. I mean, I'm biased because I cover energy, but, many people saw videos of that on social media. They saw videos of the confrontations with police. And for people who, lawmakers in Wisconsin and other states that are advancing these measures, you know, that's a potent reminder of how tense and heated those protests can become. Of course, it's not just happening in South Dakota. There are protests against energy infrastructure happening across the nation. Louisiana actually enacted its law as kayaktivists. Protesters in kayaks were criticizing and protesting against one project. So we're seeing it unfold in many different places.
And Wisconsin wants to expand an existing law for felonies to change the language from utility to energy to include those oil and gas pipelines. They've faced some pushback here in northern Wisconsin. How have these states capitalized on laws that are already in the books to maybe even tighten regulations?
Oh, that's an interesting question. In some of these cases, the states were writing the laws from whole cloth. They spitting them out from the very beginning. Wisconsin is one of a few that have gone back to earlier statutes and looked to expand them. You know, on some level, these are all dealing with, you know, protests. These are all dealing with vandalism type crimes that are already on the books. That's one of the criticisms you hear from opponents of these laws, that essentially they're taking crimes that already exist and heaping on more penalties and in a way that could really chill free speech.
Jennifer, you report on environmental and energy, the energy industry. What does this movement, these laws, especially in the last few months, signal to you about the role that energy companies play in public policy?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. I mean, energy companies have been playing a big role in public policy for a long, long time, but perhaps it is becoming more and more visible. These measures are really being driven by chemical companies, by energy companies, by refiners, who are very active at the state level. I mean, of course, they're active. I'm based in D.C. They're active at the federal level, too, but they're seeing real progress working in state houses, working with state legislatures to get laws on the books. We're seeing them really try to affect state policy, and they're doing it through, you know, coordinated networks that advance model legislation for state lawmakers. Obviously, there's a good deal of funding support for state lawmakers that may contribute to some lawmakers' receptiveness to these proposals. But no question, they're active and they're becoming more so.
although states aren't just passing these laws and implementing them without any sort of backlash, we know that there are lawsuits. We know that not all states have stuck with what they've passed originally. So what pushback are we seeing once states move forward with these regulations?
You're right. There's been a tremendous reaction to these and a tremendous legal reaction. Several of these measures are being challenged in federal court. But most recently, South Dakota, just days ago, agreed in a settlement, a legal settlement with the ACLU to back away from its recently passed law. That came only after a federal district judge, issued a preliminary injunction blocking enforcement of their law that would have allowed the state to go after individuals or groups for encouraging protests where acts of violence occur. What's interesting is that settlement, I mean, that's really the first pullback from a state. It's a really significant win for opponents of these laws. The judge in that case warned about the chilling effect of these laws and had a really interesting comment in his opinion, saying that, wondering what would have happened had these kind of riot boosting statutes been applied to civil rights protests in Birmingham, Alabama. And that's really the kind of sentiment that you're hearing opponents use as they challenge these laws once they've gone into force.
Jennifer, thanks for breaking it down for us.
Thank you.
Jennifer DeLohi is a reporter for Bloomberg News covering energy and the environment. And we've been talking about harsher penalties for protesters who trespass on or damage infrastructure like oil and gas pipelines.
Now, we pick up that point about free speech and protest concerns that these laws have raised, specifically issues related to that lawsuit we were just talking about.
Eric Casper is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
We just talked with Jennifer DeLohi of Bloomberg about these laws. And what's your immediate takeaway when we hear about the steps that states are taking to curtail trespassing around these pipelines?
Well, I think there are kind of two different competing interests here in terms of the ways we could think about it. One way of looking at this and the way that the supporters of the legislation are looking at it is that the First Amendment doesn't protect you from doing things on other people's private property without their consent. And, that's something we can go into in more detail here as we go along. But, of course, on the other side is this question of curtailing free speech rights, particularly with a lack of clarity when one might be trespassing on private property, and in particular with questions about the harshness of the penalties that if we're dealing with moving something into a felony classification, that can have potentially a really chilling effect on expression.
I mean, there are penalties for protesting or trespassing. They've been around for years. So why is it now that these laws might not be sufficient for some lawmakers?
Well, you're right. The state statutes have a trespass to land restriction. That trespass to land is a Class B forfeiture, which means it's a maximum forfeiture of $1,000. There's also a misdemeanor statute about causing property damage without consent, where one could face potentially up to 9 months of jail time. But it was in 2015 that the legislature put on the book this statute prohibiting criminal trespass to an energy provider's property. The thinking behind that is that if someone potentially go on to the property of a utility company and if they're looking to commit acts of terrorism, they could cause some sort of infrastructure damage that would have a crippling effect on a community or on a region. So that's the original thinking behind that legislation in 2015. And so this legislation would be expanding that to include not just what's already in the statute, but also looking at gas, oil, petroleum, water, and renewable fuel companies and their property that would also be included.
We're talking with Eric Casper, who's an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And you can join the conversation about potentially increasing restrictions for protesters in pipeline areas. That's 800-642-1234. Eric, lawmakers who support the expansion of these laws say that it's a way to protect workers and the people protesting. And this week on The Morning Show, Democratic State Representative Jason Fields of Milwaukee had this to say about the bill.
when we looked at this issue, it was how do we protect the workers and how do we protect individuals who do want to protest, who do want to exercise their right to free speech? And this was a way to do it and target bad actors. What happens is a lot of people get a slap on the wrist, and next thing you know, they're back to doing the same things that they did before. Case in point, in the city of Milwaukee, we've had to deal with that. And so for us, it was, let's make sure we're protecting individuals and what we call the Worker Safety and Energy Security Act by, again, increasing the penalty so we deter negative behavior.
That was Democratic State Representative Jason Fields. Eric, do these laws actually deter people the way that Representative Fields hopes?
Well, it's an interesting inquiry here to look at this because, you know, on the one hand, there's quite a bit of social science data that shows that within certain limitations, if penalties are increased, that can certainly have a deterrent effect. However, there's a real question then about what's the right point that you would have to reach to have the deterrent effect that not only potentially the maximum deterrent effect, but the deterrent effect that's appropriate. And so if you're looking at trespass as a forfeiture action, which is how it's typically going to be handled now, that forfeiture, which could be hundreds of dollars or upwards of $1,000, or potentially it could be, it certainly has some deterrent effect. And there are a lot of people who would not want to pay a forfeiture along those lines. Or you could look at what happens in a lot of states around the country where there is it's a misdemeanor offense where one could potentially face some jail time for it. But if we're looking at the deterrent effect to go down the road of making it a felony, that in of itself is a very high penalty, and it carries with it quite a number of things, not just the term, a lengthier term of imprisonment and extended supervision, but also the potentiality of a fine that's attached to that. It can have long-lasting impacts in terms of on one's job prospects or housing, education. There are other rights that are affected in terms of one's right to vote if they're a felon, or one's ability to legally possess a firearm. There's social stigma that gets attached to it. So certainly there can be a greater deterrent effect when we increase penalties. But the question we always have to ask is, what is the proper deterrent effect given the behavior that you're trying to avoid here?
We're talking to Eric Casper of UW-Eau Claire about laws being passed in states that would create harsher penalties for people who trespass on or damage oil and gas pipelines and the potential legal challenges to these laws. Let's take a call now. Phyllis from Dunn is joining us here. Phyllis, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. I work with landowners along Enbridge's Line 61 corridor who do not want a fifth pipeline put on their land. And they're very opposed to this felony trespass bill because they believe it could be used on them, that they could become felons by trespassing on their own land, which they have been forced to make available to Enbridge's for existing pipelines. So imagine if they looked out and saw Enbridge's contractors cutting down some trees that they had been promised would be spared, and this happens all the time. Say they rush out and shout angrily at the workers to stop it. The workers might say, "We're scared. We're calling the police." And the police come and they say, "You are on land that is leased by the energy company. Therefore, that falls under this law. We can arrest you now and charge you with a felony." And hopefully, in the end, a judge would say that's unconstitutional. The South Dakota law has already been thrown out. But in the meantime, they could be injured in the course of being arrested, traumatized. They could spend a whole lot of money on their defense and so on. And it's really not fair to do that to people. It's also for people who don't want these pipelines, which are carrying fossil fuels, and we have to make a transition to get away from fossil fuels. And if they would step on, having a demonstration or something and step across the line onto there, they could become felons and go to prison for 6 years. And
Phyllis, thanks so much for that call. Eric Casper, want to give you a chance to join in a more nuanced look at what this might mean for First Amendment rights on your own property.
Yeah, the law that's being proposed to amend here states that whoever intentionally enters an energy provider property without lawful authority and without the consent of the energy provider that owns, leases, or operates the property is guilty of a Class H felony. And so I think there are a couple of things that are of note there. The first is that If you have a situation where there's been an easement or a lease or something along those lines, then it would certainly apply. And so there may be questions about, you know, if we don't know exactly where the landowner's property ends and the property being utilized by the pipeline begins, that can definitely run us into some problems. And again, the chilling effect that's potentially there, if you don't know where the line is, you may want to stay a ways away from it. The other thing is that, in some of the testimony here on the bill did come down to questions of, the physical safety of the employees or of workers. And I think that's certainly something that needs to be taken into account. Question. But the law here that is proposed to be amended doesn't get into the issues of property damage or issues of disorderly conduct or if someone is engaging in some form of violence. It talks about that if one is intentionally on that property without the consent of the energy provider. So simply being there and protesting, if you are trespassing, could trigger this law coming into play.
Let's go to Matt from Lodi now. Matt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. I see this very similar to railroad infrastructure. I think everybody that has grown up in the United States has walked along the railroad tracks in some way, shape, or form in some place or another. And it's technically private property, and the railroad considers that a trespass. And I see this type of a law and this type of infrastructure the same way. Unless there's barbed wire, similar to like an airport or an electrical substation, which we would consider a high security facility, this is over the top beyond what we should be doing for trespass.
Matt, thanks so much for that call. And Eric, I wonder then, when Matt's drawing this analogy with railroads, if it is a concern that it wouldn't be people necessarily involved in protests, but it could be someone just in the area who would fall victim to this and, wind up with a felony at the end. I mean, is that a concern or is there more context to it?
Well, I can tell you, as far as what would be added into the statutes here, I mean, it would say that, if you are there for certain purposes, for instance, if one were on this property because they're monitoring compliance with public or if they're there as a part of union organizing or picketing when there's a labor dispute, or if they are exercising protected free speech or free assembly rights, that would be, that the law would say that those are activities that would be protected. But again, if we're not exactly sure where the line is, that's where some of the problems can come in. I mean, another analogy that I would draw where, I mean, the analogy, I think the lines are pretty clear, is there's a state Supreme Court decision called State versus Horn that was from 1987, where it dealt with some abortion protesters who actually went inside of a clinic and refused to leave and wanted to protest there. And the state Supreme Court there was very clear that, as an issue of private property rights for the clinic, you don't have a right to protest inside the clinic, right? But certainly there are rights of protesters if you're outside on public property, if you're in a traditional public forum, First Amendment rights would apply. And so, that's the sort of thing that we want to make sure we guard that line, right? That private property rights are protected, but at the same time that's not to the point where protesters have no idea where they can and can't go, and so they just don't protest at all, and you're effectively chilling that speech, and that's the risk with if the actual where you can and can't go isn't exactly clear.
So at what point does constitutional law step in to halt state laws that may be infringing upon our First Amendment rights?
Well, if this law were to pass, I'm quite sure that there would be some type of challenge to it, either some type of facial challenge, or if someone were arrested for allegedly violating it, that would certainly get it into a criminal case in court. And, the argument there from the defense would very clearly be along the lines of that this is creating an unconstitutional chilling effect because of the fact that it's not clear where one can and can't be, that the penalties themselves are so harsh that they're causing a chilling effect. Of course, on the other side, if the government or if it's a criminal case, the prosecution is going to argue that this is about protecting property rights, and it's about ensuring public safety and about ensuring the safety of the energy supply. And so then, you know, at that point, you know, a judge is going to have to issue a ruling on this in terms of do they find that this has crossed the line to violate the First Amendment or not.
Thank you so much for your time, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Casper is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and we've been talking about laws proposed and even passed nationwide that could impact how people protest pipelines and construction.